ABC Radio Australia.
COP30 has ended in Brazil. A climate agreement has been reached, but it's received mixed reviews. The deal boosts financing for poor nations coping with global warming, but omitted any mention of the fossil fuels driving it. There was also drama prior to the final day with fire breaking out at the venue. So on the line with us from Belém to talk all about this is Greenpeace Pacific Head, Shiva Gandan. With that, thanks for joining us, Shiva.
And thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Shiva, look, just first off, let's talk about this fire, though. I mean, what exactly happened? Were you among those evacuated?
The whole building was evacuated, actually. I was actually quite close to the pavilions where one of the pavilions actually caught fire because there was an overload in the system. It was a bit chaotic initially, but I think the authorities did a really quick and like a beautiful job to try and get everyone out. And also it was nice to see how different blocks and different people from across the world was trying to just ensure that everyone was safely out of the building.
Absolutely. Well, glad to know that you guys are all safe. Shiva, as we get to the climate deal, though, what was actually agreed in this? And can you maybe share some of the key points?
Yeah, look, I can't sugarcoat this enough because I think the outcome was extremely weak. There was a lot of pressure from historical and current blockers of ambition. So that's why the outcome that came out really wouldn't address limiting global temperatures to 1.5 degrees. So there was nothing on mitigation around fossil fuel industries and targeting them. There was nothing in terms of finance and means of implementation. One thing that I guess positive that came out, however, it's been delayed by 5 more years, is adaptation finance, which is extremely important, I guess, for like the Pacific Island countries, etc. There's something that has come out, like opened the door for outside the process because of just the pressure of so many countries within the system who was very unhappy with the outcome, that there will be a discussion on a roadmap to deforestation and a roadmap to fossil fuel phase out, but outside of the process. And hopefully that there's enough pressure put from all these countries that have been championing climate justice, that outside process discussions can filter into the inside the COP process.
Shiva, do you feel that the Pacific delegation that was there, what was the reaction from them knowing that this was what was reached at COP30?
Yeah, I think it was mixed. You know, some really wanted and pushed for high ambitions, like Vanuatu and Tuvalu. Some were just happy that something came out of this process and it didn't collapse. Because Pacific sometimes are stuck in between the process because partners like EU don't budge on finance. And then you've got like the Arab group of nations who don't budge on fossil fuel phase out language. But they held the line. Many held the line to protect what was extremely important for us, which was the best available science and facts dictates the 1.5 degrees limit, as well as pushing for countries to go back and try and look at the NDCs and try and review that. So I felt the feelings were mixed because you want to get something out of this process, especially with the multilateral process being attacked by some parties and states who are taking a unilateral approach to undermine the climate crisis, and also, which means then reduce ambition, where many climate vulnerable countries will get even further vulnerable because of just some selfish kind of approaches by certain states.
Well, obviously, the agreement that has been reached is that, you know, Australia, Turkey have agreed to, you know, a deal over next year's COP. So Turkey will host the summit, but Australia will lead negotiations. I mean, there's even a talk of a pre-COP meeting held in the Pacific. I mean, what do you think of that outcome? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. It's disappointing, obviously, as a lot of resources and preparation had been started in the Pacific and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island communities, as well as civil society, you know, to finally have a COP in the region that may really shift the dial on ambition. But it didn't eventuate. I think some within the Australian government didn't want to support the COP and didn't do enough, whereas people like Minister Bowen championed this with the Pacific. And in the end, the arrangements that have eventuated is complex. It's unique and not sure what meaningfully comes out of it, but the Pacific has a little bit of an opportunity for pre-COP. However, I do say that the biggest loss in all of this chaos has been the Pacific and the Indigenous people of Australia. But we just wouldn't know what the full extent of that agency will be for the Pacific leadership in the process, with only the pre-COP being in the Pacific and the region. So that will eventuate, I'm sure, in the couple of months from here, because Turkey, Australia and the Pacific needs to sit down together to ensure that there's a meaningful engagement in terms of ambition from the Pacific leadership.
Yeah, do you think that COP's credibility is dropping, though? You know, when you think about it, it just continuously becomes increasingly scrutinized, right? You have the influence of oil and fossil fuel corporations. And then, of course, some critics say COP has become some sort of Olympic event, right, where the host country is more interested in promoting itself. Your thoughts?
To be honest, yes. The credibility is dropping, but can it be salvaged? Yes, also. You know, we really need political will that is visionary. Also, the world needs it to work, because the Paris and the Paris Agreement is an example of it. You know, if we didn't have the Paris Agreement, the world would have been going towards 4 degrees Celsius rather than what they are currently approaching, which is 2 point something, which is still extremely detrimental and devastating for countries in the Pacific or any other climate vulnerable countries. But it has a lot of flaws to keep global temperatures within 1.5 degrees. And that is why we require political will to ensure that, we have a world that is a dignified world for the future generations to continue holding and practicing the things that they hold of value. But this multilateral process has been attacked by all sides, with the US, you know, how they've pulled out of it. And unfortunately, this is where you have a majority consensus decision, which means you make a decision for the whole world. So like I said, unfortunately, because you have a lot of blockers and a lot of different interests. But fortunately also is that you can see that there is 190-something countries who are unified in this to try and make sure that multilateralism works, because that is the only way we can collectively address the climate crisis in the most meaningful way across the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Shiva, that's all the time that we have, but always great to catch up with you. Thank you for your time.
You too. You too. Vinaka.
Vinaka. That is Greenpeace Pacific head Shiva Goundan. Well, as you would have heard, as you would have heard, after months of negotiations, Australia and Turkey have agreed to a deal over next year's COP. Again, Turkey will host a summit, but Australia will lead negotiations, and that there will be a pre-COP meeting held in the Pacific. Now, I know this decision has drawn some disappointment from Pacific leaders and advocates, so where to from here? On the line to unpack this is climate advocate and former director of the Global Centre for Social Justice and Advocacy Leadership, Alopi Latukefu. With that, I say mara tauma e bongbongini, Alopi.
Good morning. How are you?
I am well. Thank you so much. Look, I know you weren't at COP, though, but when you heard that Australia withdrew its bid to host COP31, you know, to sort of reach this compromise of Turkey, what was your initial reaction?
My initial reaction was that in some respects, while very disappointing, it wasn't unexpected in these sorts of fora. These things can change despite assumptions that may have been taken in, that it was in the bag, that in fact there's always the possibility that these things can not go the way of the hopeful host country, in this case Australia, and that has panned out. And we saw in some respects the geopolitics of the world as it is playing out at the COP meeting. I'm assuming that some of the reasoning around where Australia ended up was partly due to the fact that the numbers were not lining up in terms of support. So rather than not have it hosted with an opportunity to participate, Australia chose to look at the other option of finding a way to still have a hand in the game, still have a meeting in the Pacific, and to be a influential voice.
Do you feel, though, in any sense, Alopi, that the Pacific has been let down, though, because of this decision?
I just think at this point, yes, in one respect, the expectation was raised that this next COP would be the one that would allow for the Pacific's situation to be brought to the world in a very clear way that was unfiltered by the process, but actually delivering people a very clear understanding from the region's perspective of the existential crisis that the region currently faces as a result of climate change. The one issue that's been consistently put forward by our leaders in the region as the most important issue from a security standpoint, from a human standpoint, from a general process of impact that's been happening over decades now. And, of course, huge disappointment with it not coming to our region, not coming to Australia, and for Australia to have the opportunity to stand up and be seen to be a leader for the region, which I think many in the Pacific were looking for.
Yeah. Well, we've got Australia's climate minister, right, Chris Bowen, who is expected to oversee COP31, even though it'll be hosted in Turkey. Does this in some way give you some reassurance that the Pacific will still have at least visibility at these talks?
Well, I think having Chris Bowen in the chair allows for the region to have a strong advocate and strong voice in negotiation, and someone who will put on the agenda the phase out of fossil fuels as a priority, something that he worked very hard to try and secure in earlier language, but which has faltered slightly in terms of the Belém process from what had been achieved earlier. There's also the issue of loss and damage for the region and the opportunity and for the world, and the opportunity to see investment to try and mitigate the impacts of climate change to the Pacific and others. All these issues, along with many other issues that are now playing out, where, as we can see, climate change is no longer a marginal issue to be decided at some conference every year. This is an issue that is impacting everyone in the world now, and it's an everyday issue that we need to be talking about every day. And hopefully, with Bowen in the chair, looking at negotiations, with the Pacific having a meeting in the region, hopefully not in Australia, but actually in the region, we will see a realization from leaders of the world of the need for us to get serious about this, to actually see this as an opportunity for change.
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, obviously the views that have been coming through, people are very disheartened by the news. But talks again of a pre-COP meeting in the Pacific. Your thoughts? Where do you think this should be held?
Well, I think naturally it will need to probably be held in a place where it can be accommodating of leaders coming to the region. So my heart would say hold it in a place like Kiribati or Tuvalu, a smallest impacted state that is actually facing the most immediate crisis. But in reality, I think probably somewhere like Fiji makes a lot of sense, but potentially some of the other larger countries in the region who could host it, possibly Tonga. And the reason I mentioned Tonga is the Pacific Resilience Facilities in Tonga, and it would be wonderful to see the alignment of the focus that Australia's putting on into the PRF, Tonga's commitment to hosting it in Tonga, and seeing the, consolidation of a lot of effort that's been put in by the region to get a focus on what's needed for the future being pulled together in the discussions and being pulled together in the way in which leaders are brought into a consensus position. And, that's a great opportunity that the Pacific, in the way the Pacific does business, can really hopefully move things along.